From the independent producer project of KCRW, this is Here Be Monsters.
So it's the mid-90s, and I'm wondering what you guys were specifically looking for in a website and why you decided that you even needed one.
Well, the general manager at the time was really into techno, Mac, everything stuff, and he decided we need a website. And he looked around and found a company in this area that would do a website design for us, pretty basic, for pretty, like a decent price. They charged us $1,000. They didn't have any background in horses or anything, but I think they just kind of wanted to get their business started.
And what was this company called?
It was called HireSource.
This is Heather Cronert. She works for the San Diego Polo Club in Rancho Santa Fe in California. And in 1996, the Polo Club got their first website.
The two guys that I worked with had bald heads, and they kind of looked alike. They both had bald heads. They had no facial hair. They were real gentle. They were really gentle souls. Just, you know, just nice guys. They had a van that they said their whole group uses, and they would go off in their van to lunch, and then they would come back. So,
do you remember what the van looked like?
It was beige. It had windows, but it was like an Econoline beige van. Beige or white, it was kind of dirty looking. The main guy that I worked with, he called himself Stuart. The other guy, I think his name was John, but after the whole incident, I saw a Time magazine article, and the pictures on the front cover, there was a picture of Stuart, but his name wasn't Stuart. It was something else.
Did you ever wonder about their relationship outside of work, or what the uniformity suggested about them?
No, I just thought they were odd, but there are odd people in this world. We were almost finished with the website. Stuart was saying, okay, just give me a call, whatever you need. So I would call them and say, how do I do this? How do I do that? And then one day he came and he said, okay, I'm going to do this for you, but I just want you to let you know Easter's coming up and we're going to be gone over Easter, so you can't reach us. We're going to a retreat or something. They were very optimistic that they will be back. I had no clue that they were going to do what they did. Not an inkling of what, you know. I just thought they were going to be gone for a retreat. So that was the last time I talked to them. And that was the weekend it happened.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about...
Start button all the way up to the top.
The podcast about...
The unknown.
Welcome to our third session in our series, Beyond Human. The last call. And why don't we just get started? So, Nora, why don't you give us the first question that we put on our list?
Okay. Would you like to discuss the difference between the soul and the mind and the vehicle?
The soul, the mind, the vehicle. So, vehicle, now sometimes in religious literature, this is referred to as a vessel. So we'll use the term vehicle when we speak of the body. Where we get into trouble is when we identify and call this me, because this is certainly not me. If the soul has awakened, this is just a suit of clothes that I'm wearing, and at times it can be an encumbrance for me. It can be something that I don't want to identify with. So it has its own desires. It's kind of like a living computer that...
In 1972, Marshall Applewhite met a nurse named Bonnie Nettles, and Bonnie told him that extraterrestrials had told her that he, Marshall Applewhite, had a divine assignment. And then Marshall Applewhite had a vision, that he was the son of God, that he was just like Jesus. And as Marshall grew closer and closer with Bonnie Nettles, the two created a religion. The religion was called Heaven's Gate.
Now, the soul... We can think of the soul as a pillowcase or a container, even though it's an invisible container. It's a container that encompasses the space that the body takes. Sometimes we feel like it encompasses even a little outside the space that the vehicle has. So it's like a pillowcase or a container for the mind. So if we're talking about vehicle, soul, and mind, then flesh body is just two clothes, vehicle.
The theology of Heaven's Gate borrows heavily from Christianity, New Age spiritualism, and UFO conspiracy theories. One of the tenets of Heaven's Gate was the concept of exit points, times when a person can leave the planet, evolve to a higher level, and live a higher life. In 1985, Bonnie died of liver cancer. By then, Heaven's Gate had developed a small but strong following. And to hear Marshall Applewhite tell it, she didn't die, but instead departed her vehicle, her body. She was a martyr now. The group looked to her for guidance. She was waiting for them in outer space.
The soul goes to heaven. So our hope and our prayer for your sake is that you will start getting into that vehicle. You will start warding off all the bombardment that you will begin to hear that say, boy, is this guy crazy? Is this a cult if I ever heard one? Yes, it is. It's a cult. I mean, it's the cult of cults. It's the cult of truth. I have nothing to fear if I am a child of my Heavenly Father, nor do you. But are you going to be satisfied with just being a child of your Heavenly Father? Or are you going to take advantage of an opportunity to enter His kingdom, not need to return? And I see that we're down to 5 seconds. We'll see you in our next session.
In 1997, on the cusp of an exit point, there were about 40 members of Heaven's Gate. They funded a pretty lavish life on Earth working as web designers. So the group created a web design company called Higher Source, and those were the men who helped Heather with the San Diego Polo Club. HeavensGate.com was one of the best examples of the kind of website Higher Source could make. Its theme was outer space, a landing page with a starry background, giant galactic font, animated GIFs, pictures of aliens. And that's how Stephen Hill and Yvonne Hill of Cincinnati, Ohio, first found them.
It's so easy to look at this and say, you know, they got deceived and tricked into going to Heaven's Gate. In a way, yes. Thing. I've never spoken about it because, you know, people always, they always develop their understanding to what happened, you know, and judgment comes from that.
Stephen and Yvonne were introduced to each other by a mutual friend. Their love wasn't instantaneous. Instead, it grew. But they had so much in common, similar ideas about religion, how to live, what happiness was. They both wanted kids. They had well-paying jobs. Eventually, they got married. They had those kids, and it seemed like life was going to be pretty good. They had everything they needed. But a few years in, that changed.
Me and Yvonne was experiencing social pressures. And this basically created, you know, the situation where we decided to leave.
Stephen wasn't able to explain exactly how he was being attacked, but here's what I understood. He had everything he ever wanted, a job, a house, a wife, 4 kids, but it wasn't enough. Stephen experienced feelings of paranoia. Everyone was after him and nowhere was safe. So he got online. It was 1996 and the internet still felt a little bit chaotic. When Stephen found Heaven's Gate's website, he started reading about the group's philosophies on life, about the heavens and outer space. The internet was new and Stephen had found the best new thing. A group of people who knew what it felt like to be alienated on planet Earth. A group of people willing to listen to him, guide him, even employ him.
They had an opening to work on a movie. The man they called Doe Apple Marshall White, am I correct? I think that's the official.
Marshall Apple.
Well, the other way around, yeah. How about that? He actually was working on a movie he was going to create, you know, regarding his cause and, you know, what he believed. And I went out there actually with the ideal to be able to work and help doing a movie regarding all the things that I was reading on the internet.
This was perfect. Steven wanted to make new media, he was excited about the internet, and he knew how to put together videos. He had already done it for other jobs. So, knowing that Heaven's Gate could offer him the experience on the web and employ him to make film and offer him the kind of spirituality that he was looking for, that was too good to pass up. But Yvonne didn't want her husband to leave without her. She wasn't happy in Cincinnati either. She was feeling the same kinds of pressure that Steven was feeling. And whatever he was going to look for, she wanted to find it with him.
The initial plan, was for me to go on my own, to California and fulfill my dreams is working in an audiovisual department and use my giftings according to that. And I remember, Yvonne basically crying and boo-hooing for a couple 2 week period of time, actually, till she convinced me, that she wanted to go, and this is, when you marry, that's your other half. And I did love Yvonne as my wife.
So they left their kids with family and they flew to Las Vegas. That's where a couple members of the group, including their leader, Marshall Applewhite, asked to meet Steven and Yvonne, just to get to know each other. And if that went well, the plan was to move to California, to Rancho Santa Fe, and live in a mansion with the rest of Heaven's Gate. Think of it as a job interview, but the offer letter includes a new home, a new community, a new religion, and a new identity.
The first time we went, we flew, and we went to Las Vegas, and we met. Yvonne got off the plane. I seen a guy that had the shirt button all the way up to the top. People today don't normally dress that as a culture, so you knew they were kind of different. And I've automatically seen my era.
So you were scared right away.
Yeah, I knew. I had red flags. I red flagged them and I was going to walk by. But Yvonne, in her openness, she was able to identify and say, and go up to them, and I said, oh, no, don't, it's nothing I could do. It happened so fast. And she met the gentleman, and I couldn't stop. So the integration started right there.
This word, integration, is a word that Steven used a lot. I think it's always what he was looking for, to feel unified in something, to feel a part of something bigger. And when Steven agreed to bring Yvonne to Vegas, he was hoping that whatever he was going to feel, they would feel it together. What he wasn't expecting, though, was that in Vegas, Yvonne would feel something much stronger and much more pronounced than what he was feeling.
That signified how the whole process was with me trying to pull Yvonne out from the grips of these people, and I had to wait my time. And so that really signified how this whole situation was from the get-go. I didn't realize how strongly, but I knew there was a big mistake that she was there. When they entered the picture, there was no more me and Yvonne, husband and wife. Now Yvonne was separated from me. I lost full control immediately as we went through the process of being with the Heaven's Gate group. We didn't operate as husband and wife.
While they were in Las Vegas, Yvonne and Steven spent time with Marshall Applewhite, Doe. At one point on that trip, they were all in a van together, the same van that Heather remembers seeing the web designers take on their lunch break. In the van, Yvonne asked Doe about something she'd read. There had been a rumor that Heaven's Gate killed two people, two FBI agents who were investigating them.
Yeah, I remember her telling, asked him and said, was that you guys? That kid. So she was looking, Yvonne looking for them to tell.
So she asked them explicitly, did you kill two men?
Did you kill two men? Yeah, was that you guys? I remember that. And I'm like, that's the scariest that I've ever been, because you don't know what the end result is going to be. Doe, the leader of the Heaven's Gate group, he said, see that van driver up there? I could go tell him to drive off a cliff, and he will. So he looks at me. He doesn't look at her. He looks at me, and he says, you understand? And I said, yes, I understand.
In 1975, there were two individuals who came public, held some meetings around the country, and said that they were from the Kingdom of Heaven. And those two individuals were T and Doe. T, my partner, who has returned to the Kingdom of Heaven. and left me here with the responsibility of whatever is remaining of this task, for it was mine to fulfill.
Marshall Applewhite was telling Stephen and Yvonne that he was in charge. It's his group. They're his rules. And that's what was running through Stephen's head when Heaven's Gate opened their arms to the hills. If they wanted, they could move to California and join the group. So, Yvonne and Stephen went back to Cincinnati, and they had an important decision to make. Stay in Ohio or move to California. Sometimes people consciously choose to change their entire lives. Like, if life was Scrabble and dumping your letters was the same as dumping all of your old problems in exchange for newer, unknowable problems. I think that's what Stephen and Yvonne were doing. In Cincinnati, Stephen felt like his family was under attack. He said people with binoculars were watching him. He wasn't sure, but he thought it might be Heaven's Gate. Remember, in Stephen's mind, Heaven's Gate had the power to kill people, and he felt coerced. His wife had connected with them. She liked them. She felt like the kind of spirituality that they had to offer was the kind that she was looking for. Stephen and Yvonne took phone calls with Heaven's Gate, and their relationship with the group grew stronger. In the end, they decided to go.
And that's what put us right back out there, on the way back out there again.
So, despite the red flags in Las Vegas, Stephen and Yvonne decided to dump their Scrabble letters. They moved to California, and they officially joined Heaven's Gate. The house, the job, the car, they left it all behind. The kids went to stay with Yvonne's family. The hills had a new calling. They were getting new problems.
We drove out to California. I remember getting there. We pulled into a gated community of high value, you know, high society, if you will. I remember the first house when we crossed, got it through the gate. I looked to the left, and a gentleman had a lake for his backyard. Just coming into that environment, you know, is enough for you to, you know, kind of forget all your troubles and all your problems and just enjoy.
You know those aerial photos in People magazine of celebrities' houses in California? Well, when you think of Heaven's Gate's mansion, think of those. A giant terracotta roof, a sprawling driveway big enough for 20 cars, palm trees, greenery, a pool next to a tennis court, next to manicured gardens.
You know, when I first got there, me and Yvonne, we walked in, everybody was in the living room of this gigantic mansion. Everybody was right there, and we opened the door, we come in, and the lady said, "They're black." They were shocked to see that we were black. And so it was a lot of love about it, but to see that we were black for some of the members, it brought about, you know, that concern. You know, it's like, they're black, you know what I mean? And it was quiet in the set for a little while, but, you know, relatively there, we were accepted. But I'm thinking, that's odd. You know what I mean? You don't know what I'm feeling here. And you're talking about my skin color. You know what I mean? Like, what's going on? I'm looking for answers.
As soon as they walked in, the hills were treated like two people already doing something wrong. But over time, Yvonne got over it. She was finding what she was looking for, but for Stephen, that feeling never went away. Life with Heaven's Gate was sort of like gendered summer camp. Everyone's assigned a bunk. Romantic relationships are not recognized or tolerated. Bathroom schedules are regimented, timed. Meals are served communally. There's mandatory meetings with the director. There were even uniforms. And here's how it was different from summer camp. Sex was shed. Some of the male members of Heaven's Gate were castrated. The things that make humans individualized, personalized, that was all taken away. The group even changed their names, all to follow the same formula. With the exception of Marshall Applewhite, everyone's name ended in O-D-Y. There was Glenody, Neody, Sorody, Chakoti. Yvonne's name was Devoti.
Going into the Heaven's Gate, it was understood that they don't honor, you know, marriages outside of, you know, the cult. You know, they knew that the programming they use the mind control and they use to bring people in and to make them a singularity, if you will, wasn't going to work on me.
For reasons unknown to Stephen, he was the only one who wasn't assigned a bunk. He slept in his own bed, attached to nobody else. Stephen spent his time at the mansion reading about the group, about Marshall, the group's doctrine, and, of course, web design. He felt like he was being treated differently, like he stuck out. He especially felt like Marshall Applewhite didn't trust him, like he was intentionally kept far away from everyone. Weeks went by, and by then Yvonne was settled in and integrated with the group. But Stephen never got there. Stephen started feeling sick. He described it as an imbalance, not being able to walk straight, feeling dizzy.
I had it was a loss of balance. They call it vertigo today. And I never recovered. As long as I was there, I couldn't walk straight without stumbling. Okay, and it wasn't going to let me go as long as I stayed there.
What happened that made you decide that you had to go?
I didn't have any other choice but to leave, you know. I could no longer function within the realms of being within the cult's ideology. You know what I mean? And listen, I didn't want to leave my wife there, you know, but she's totally brainwashed by now, okay? When she walked by me and she was looking around, she didn't even say a word to me. There was no, you know, she was gone. She was gone. And it's kind of disturbed me. They played us against one another, okay? Because they knew deep down inside I was waiting on Yvonne to come around. So that's how they played us. I remember that quite well. You know, the very thought of it depleted me.
Stephen wanted to go home. Marshall Applewhite noticed, and one day he sent Stephen outside to speak with Yvonne. This was one of their first chances to actually talk to each other since they arrived to Heaven's Gate. It was one of the only times while they were there together that the two even acted like they knew each other.
She basically was holding me up while we walked around. And this went on for an hour and a half, and told Yvonne, I said, Yvonne, I'm ready to leave. It's the first time I said it. And the most difficult thing when her response is what really disheartened. Yeah, I mean, I was so disheartened. And she said, I'm going to tell. She was totally brainwashed. And not only that, she was going to tell.
After Stephen told his wife he was leaving, Marshall Applewhite drove him to the airport. They said goodbye. But it wasn't a better life he was going home to. It wasn't even the same life. Remember, Stephen and Yvonne had left behind their kids. Two of them were newborn twins. They were living with Yvonne's family. Getting them back was not on the table. Going back home pretty much meant going back to nothing. It was survival.
My course, upon leaving, my concern was to get my wife back. So I come back to our house. And, you know, of course, after going and experiencing all this, you know, nothing really mattered anymore for us, the American dream and, you know, the security, you know, that wasn't going on in my life.
Stephen moved into a sort of halfway house for people who need help. He spent 5 months in Cincinnati hoping his wife would come home. It was his new religion. It took the place of Heaven's Gate in his brain. Get her back, he thought, and everything would be okay. She'd be a mother to his children, a wife, a companion. It became an obsession. Of course she'll come back, he thought. How could she not? One thing that I haven't mentioned yet is that everything happening in this story coincides with an unusual astronomical event. In July of 1995, right before Stephen discovered Heaven's Gate, another discovery happened. Two amateur astronomers discovered a massive comet living somewhere off between Jupiter and Saturn. It became the biggest, brightest mass of light that anyone living on Earth had ever seen. That comet, called Hale-Bopp, worked her way towards the sun. She grew brighter, inspiring masses of people to speculate. Where will she go? Is she coming for us? She's a UFO. She's a decoy. There was plenty of time for that fascination to grow because Hale-Bopp was visible to the naked eye for 18 months. By 1997, when Stephen was back in Cincinnati, planet Earth was standing outside watching her, shining back, slowly approaching. And when Marshall Applewhite saw the comet, he saw something that nobody else was talking about. Marshall Applewhite saw a spacecraft trailing Hale-Bopp. And that, he decided, was how he would get himself and his followers back to T, back to Bonnie Nettles. You could get on the spacecraft, he told them, but there was only one time for exit, and there was only one way to get on.
The students that sit before me, our reason for speaking to you is we feel urgently to warn you of what we are about to say. If I would title this tape, it would be Last Chance to Evacuate Planet Earth Before It Is Recycled. It's going to happen very soon. This is the end of the age. The only ones who survive the recycling are the ones who want to leave. And it requires that you leave behind everything of human ways, human behavior, human ignorance, human misinformation. If you condemn me thoroughly and call me the Antichrist or whatever you want to call me, it's not going to hurt me. It's going to hurt you. Nothing can hurt me. I know that the presentation of this little tape is not what I would call skilled or polished, but I know that it has the truth. I hope that you take advantage of this. I hope that I have been a servant of the next level, and that you might somehow come to know the next level through this meager effort.
Large refrigerated trucks took the 39 bodies from the mansion after what authorities say was a well-prepared, methodically orchestrated mass suicide. In all, 21 women and 18 men, ages 20 to 72, apparently took their own lives, most likely from a drug overdose. San Diego County Sheriff's investigators released their own videotape showing the eerie scene they encountered on Wednesday. All victims were lying on beds or mattresses. They were dressed in black. They had purple shrouds over their faces and upper bodies.
The only way to get on the spacecraft, Applewhite said, was to commit suicide. That's not what Heaven's Gate called it. They said suicide meant life on Earth and that living was death, and dying was the only way to start living. To live meant departing your vehicle, your body, so that your soul could get on board the spacecraft and be delivered to a higher level of existence. So over the course of 3 days, at the end of March in 1997, 2 days after Hale-Bopp got the closest it ever got to planet Earth, the 39 members of Heaven's Gate ate poison, and they died. They wore all black, matching Nike sneakers, and they each had $5.75 in their pockets because, they said, that was the interplanetary toll to get to where they were going.
When the bodies were found, investigators say one computer showed a picture of the comet Hale-Bopp. That fueled speculation the group felt it was entering a new world, foreshadowed by the comet's arrival.
And so I'm seeing her on the CBS Evening News, you know, and upon first looking at that, you know, I was happy, actually, because I thought that she would be leaving and coming home, and to find out, you know, that she was of amongst those 39 people that committed suicide really caused for years and years of depression and just psychologically unable to accept, you know, the reality of what took place, you know, not able to communicate. And the next 10 years after, you know, my wife committing suicide, you know, my life, it's been a living hell, if you will.
Before Heaven's Gate took their own lives, each member of the group filmed a tape. You can still find these tapes. They're on the internet. The group called them exit statements, as though living on Earth was a job, and they were putting in their 2 weeks' notice. Like everyone else, Yvonne made one.
Hey, Rody. How long have you been in the class?
I've been in the class, will be 6 months Sunday. I think I may be the last one up to this point to have come to be with TNDO at this time. I'm very happy to be here.
Do you have any thoughts about this, what's next for us?
The only thoughts that I have is the preparation that I've made to separate from the vehicle. Leave it all behind. There's nothing here for me. I want to look forward, keep my eye on TNDO. That's my path.
Those kids that Yvonne and Stephen left behind are grown-ups now. And Stephen confesses to me that he didn't have much of a role in raising them, except for one son, who's now gone on to get a good job, get married, and raise a family of his own.
Yeah, to get back to questions about my children, my son is the one that I raised myself, you know, Yvonne's family, you know, they raised the other three. I have really no contact with the rest of them, you know, but to know that they're doing well, you know, is, you know, I'm more than satisfied with the outcome.
For a second, I feel like the story Stephen is telling me is right. But I don't think beautiful, healthy children negate Yvonne's suicide. And anyway, I don't think Yvonne would want me to call it that. At almost this exact moment in our interview, the one son Stephen still keeps in touch with walked into the house where I was sitting with Stephen. His wife was with him, and so were their kids.
This is my family.
Hi. Hello.
It's my family. They have come. But these are my... Hi. These are my children. Come, could you come
Hi.
On?
I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. We didn't want to interrupt you.
Hi. Hi, Kiva.
It's so good. I haven't seen him in about 6 months.
One grandchild, a tiny baby girl in a stroller, was meeting her grandpa Stephen for the first time.
And another baby.
And this is the new one. This is the first time I've seen it. Look, Layla.
3 weeks.
Congratulations.
Layla. Layla? Layla?
I think she's out in the car.
Layla. Oh, it's the first time I've seen her.
She's beautiful. Congratulations.
Oh. Yeah, this is it. Look at her. Oh. Wow.
I'm about to get her out of here.
They're my grandbabies. Here go, grandpa.
We'll be back, Steve, okay?
Okay, Jaja May.
Look at you, lucky grandpa.
Yes, that's what, you know, and looking at them, you know, it just, you know, it's like the fulfillment to know that, you know.
So I would call them and say, how do I do this? How do I do that? And then one day he came and he said, okay, I'm going to do this for you, but I just want you to let you know Easter's coming up and we're going to be gone over Easter, so you can't reach us. We're going to a retreat or something. They were very optimistic that they will be back. I had no clue that they were going to do what they did. Not an inkling of what, you know. I just thought they were going to be gone for a retreat.
And why do you think they kept saying that they were coming back?
Because they believed they were going to come back. I think they thought this was just a trip they were going to go on, and they'll be back to their house, back to everything. This is just a little trip for a couple weeks, and maybe the comet will bring them back.
Concurrent to Heaven's Gate's departure, Hale Bopp approached the sun. By April 1st of 1997, 1 week after 39 people, including Marshall Applewhite and Yvonne Hill, were pronounced dead, the comet came as close to the sun as it would in its lifetime. And it shined. It was gliding, and from the tails of the comet blew a giant mane. I remember watching that light on April 1st. I was 9 years old. My third grade teacher challenged us to go outside that night and write down what we saw. I'd like to think that I saw a spacecraft following the comet away from this world. Hale Bopp seemed to be fading, but from where it flew, we were the fading ones. Our last moments before the Earth recycled.
If you're thinking of suicide or know someone who is, please reach out to the Samaritans. You can call them anytime at 1-877-870-4673, or you can visit them online at SamaritanHope.org. Again, that number is 1-877-870-4673. For a list of country-specific hotlines, please visit our website, hbmpodcast.com, where we have a link to suicide.org's worldwide list of hotlines. This episode was produced by Lena Masitsis. She's a longtime contributor to this show. And if you've never heard our 20th episode, definitely check it out. It's called Without Name, and it's this wonderful exploration of this building in Brooklyn where Lena used to live that's now haunted by its previous tenants and the ghost of a gecko. This episode was edited by me, Jeff Entman, with help from our KCRW editor, Nick White, and our very own Bethany Denton. Thanks also to Amy Isaacson. The music you heard on this episode came from four different musicians: Cirocell, Swamp Dog, Flowers, and The Black Spot. The tapes of Marshall Applewhite that you heard on this episode were condensed from many hours of educational videos released by Heaven's Gate. These videos are still available online, and they were uploaded to YouTube by an account called Heaven's Gate Database. And while Lena and I don't know this for sure, we are somewhat convinced that this account is actively managed by one of the surviving members of Heaven's Gate. And yes, there are surviving members of Heaven's Gate. Lena actually emailed with two of them for background information on this story. These two members stayed behind to help manage the Heaven's Gate website and promote the ideology of the religion after the main group exited. You can still visit the Heaven's Gate website, designed by Higher Source, by going to heavensgate.com. And you can also read Lena's email correspondence with the webmasters in its entirety on our website, hbmpodcast.com. Also on our website, you'll find the Marshall Applewhite tapes that we used in this episode, and a picture of Stephen Hill holding a binder of educational material that he was given upon his arrival at Heaven's Gate. And of course, our website has our entire back catalog of shows, instructions on how to subscribe to the show, and our contact info so that you can bug us on social media or send us an email. Again, we're hbmpodcast.com. And speaking of email, right now we're looking for any listeners of the show who are Scientologists. We might want to talk to you for an upcoming episode. So if you're a practicing or a former Scientologist, please write in. We're hbmpodcast@gmail.com. And please, if you're hearing this, we'd love for you to review Here Be Monsters on iTunes. These reviews help new ears find the show. And if you've done it already, thank you. It means the world to us. Okay, that's all for now. More episodes soon, and thanks for listening.